Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. It's August, guys. We are only a few weeks away from the beginning of the NFL season. We're continuing to preview the NFL year. And I think the best way, the best thing that comes out every year that previews the NFL is the Football Outsiders Almanac. It's the 2019 edition that's just come out. I, of course, wrote for the Football Outsiders Almanac in years past. It is a tome that I rely upon every season before the year, during the year, and after the year to understand what's happening in the NFL. And joining us today on the Shell Performance Line to talk about the Football Outsiders Almanac and talk about two teams in the NFC West who could be making moves and making waves here in 2019 is Vince Verhey of Football Outsiders. Vince, how are you?
Mr. Barnwell, how are you today?
It's always a pleasure, Vince, to have you on. Of course, we've had you on for many years now. You've been a regular contributor to the show. We've been friends for a long time, and we have a very interesting set of teams to discuss today in the NFC West. I think the Rams, everyone kind of figures they're going to be a meaningful part of this year. You're in Seattle. We're not going to talk about the Seahawks, though. We're going to talk about the Arizona Cardinals. And first, let's get to the San Francisco 49ers, a team that I'm pretty high on in terms of improving this year. I put them in my column at ESPN.com about the teams most likely to improve in 2019. I think a lot of people are expecting an improvement. Outsiders, the Football Outsiders Almanac has the Niners improving to 7.7 wins this year. But if you watch Jimmy Garoppolo on Monday night in his preseason return, he looked, well, terrible. He looked awful. And I think certainly it seems like one of the reasons people would expect the Niners to improve would be Jimmy Garoppolo taking a step forward and playing more frequently than he did in 2018. So let's start with that. In terms of the outsider's projection, in terms of what you're seeing for the Niners in 2019, how much of a possible Niners improvement is pegged on a return, and more specifically a return to the form we saw in 2017 from Jimmy Garoppolo?
Not that much, honestly. Mm-hmm. People kind of forget because the Niners only won four games. Their offense was not that bad and really wasn't any worse in the second half of the year. The second three quarters of the year, the third, mm-hmm. the last part of the year after Garoppolo went down, I'm off to a raging start today. The Niners were, still a decent offense after Garoppolo got hurt. Mm-hmm. And as a number of sources have pointed out, if you put Nick Mullins' stats from last year up against Jimmy Garoppolo's stats of the last 2 years, mm-hmm. it's really hard to tell which is which.
Yes.
It looks like it's just the machine kept on rolling and he was not missed much at all.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You run the numbers and they're basically identical when you look at Garoppolo's performance between 2017 and 2018 and Nick Mullins' performance last year. Do you think, independent of the numbers, having watched them both play, do you think there is a bigger disparity in terms of their actual performance, or is that, pretty accurate? The numbers pretty much tell that they're basically playing at the same level.
I think the overall numbers are a little bit misleading in that Jimmy Garoppolo has been better and more productive, but more mistake-prone, mm-hmm. Whereas Nick Mullins has been kind of smarter and safer and a benefit of some benefit of circumstances, basically. The two biggest things about Mullins were that he had, by a large degree, the highest percentage of his yards coming after the catch last year, mm-hmm. Way more than Garoppolo did, frankly, and more than anyone else. So he has the benefit of playing in Kyle Shanahan's system, which is really good at scheming receivers open and then making easy completions and watching as they rumble for big gains downfield. When you look at what Nick Mullins is actually doing, he, among all qualifying quarterbacks, he had the fewest percentage of passes that were deep to the outside, mm-hmm. also the fewest lowest percentage of passes that were bomb throws of 26 yards more downfield. Mm-hmm. So this is a guy who knows what he's doing. He's certainly, his floor is good backup. Mm-hmm. This is a guy who knows what he's doing. He makes good decisions. He's accurate. I have serious questions about his arm strength. And I think given a full season of Nick Mullins and a full offseason to prepare for Nick Mullins, teams are not going to, they will not worry about the deep ball at all. They will close down on the short completions more. And those short completions will suddenly be 5 and 6 yard gains instead of 20, 30, 40 yard gains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it certainly seems like, I haven't run the numbers myself, but it does seem like Garoppolo was playing in more competitive situations than Nick Mullins was, especially, given that he was playing for a losing team for the second half of last season.
Yeah. The biggest thing about Garoppolo is that he's still an unknown.
Right.
If you're confident that Garoppolo is going to play well, you're probably mistaken. If you are confident that Garoppolo is not going to play well, you're probably mistaken. He has fewer NFL pass attempts right now than Baker Mayfield or Sam Darnold. He's still essentially an on-field rookie. Mm-hmm. So he's still a work in progress. He's still a great unknown. He's still an enigma.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I mean, and I think we, you know, because he's been around for so long, because we've seen him now start, you know, the better part of four seasons, at least for a game or two here or there. I think it was four, at least three seasons, maybe four. Maybe I'm having my math wrong, but maybe we see a guy who has been around for a while and been projected to be a useful quarterback for a while, has had two, you know, pretty smart people in Bill Belichick and now Kyle Shanahan think he is a useful quarterback. But, you know, obviously, like you said, still an incredible amount of time to go before we can even really judge how successful of a quarterback he is or how successful he's going to be. In terms of Shanahan, I mean, he obviously has a reputation coming out of Atlanta, other places as an offensive wizard. Through 2 years in San Francisco, given the personnel he's had, given some of the decisions that the organization has made with him probably having some say in that as well, I mean, do you think he's still living up to that moniker?
I think just watching, mostly from watching, honestly, more than anything statistical I can give you, mm-hmm. when you watch the 49ers play, even with their backup quarterbacks, it is striking how often, like I say, the San Francisco 49ers quarterback job is complete an easy pass to a wide-open receiver and watch him run for a big game. This is the job requirement. Mm-hmm. It's a stunning, kind of, frankly, how good he is at scheming guys open and making things easy. Now, what he has struggled with is keeping his quarterbacks upright. Mm-hmm. His quarterbacks get hit a ton. All three San Francisco 49ers quarterbacks last year got knocked to the ground more often than the average quarterback did. This is also true of the year before, and even the year before, last year in Atlanta, was the highest knockdown rate Matt Ryan's ever had. So even as great as the Falcons were racing the Super Bowl, Matt Ryan still got hit more often than usual. And an anecdotal reference, but I seem to recall a key play in that Super Bowl against New England where Matt Ryan was hit and knocked down. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting because they don't allow pressure more than most other teams. The 49ers have not, but they still have the quarterbacks get hit a lot, which it turns out that the plan A for most quarterbacks is when you deal with pressure, check down or throw it away or scramble or do something. Mm-hmm. For the 49ers, the way to handle pressure is take a big hit and complete the pass anyway, which does not seem like a good way to, you know, keep your quarterback upright for a full 16 games.
Yeah, I always think about Philip Rivers as the good example of this, where there are plays where, you know, maybe one play a game where if a rusher's coming free, he just throws it into the ground disgustedly and just moves on because he doesn't want to get hit. He doesn't want, it's not that he's, you know, not brave or he's smart. He's played six, you know, as everyone has played 15 years now, with the one torn ACL earlier in his career because he doesn't get hit as frequently as quarterbacks of his age typically do. So absolutely, you know, I think there's that thing of live to play another day. And I mean, it does seem like, you know, the projection here is based more on what might happen elsewhere with the Niners as opposed to the quarterback situation, but you want to have your guys healthy. I mean, it's certainly better to have your guys available, even if they're not necessarily playing. And injuries so far with the Niners have already cleared out some of the depth chart. We've seen Jerick McKinnon get injured, or I guess stay injured might be the better way to put it, with his knee injury. Trent Taylor went down. Obviously, George Kittle is going to play a big role in this offense if he stays healthy, but who do you think ends up as sort of the players who matter in this offense in terms of the running backs and the receivers?
That is a fantastic question, and I am not nearly smart enough to give you a concrete answer. There is a running gag for those of you who already have purchased Football Outsiders Almanac 2019. If you go through the player comments in the San Francisco running backs, there's a running gag about how difficult it is to figure out how San Francisco is going to use all these running backs. You got Jerick McKinnon, you got Tevin Coleman, you got Kyle Juszczyk, you've got Matt Breida, who no one seems to know this. Matt Breida has been a big play machine in his NFL career. Mm-hmm. His big play rate is very similar to what Saquon Barkley did last year. Mm-hmm. And he's a guy who, on a normal team, they'd say, let's figure out how to get this guy a bigger role in the offense. San Francisco's response to this was, let's figure out how many other weapons we can get to bring into the offense to take opportunities away from Matt Breida. Mm-hmm. So it's a strange sort of team building where they just figure, It's almost like John Lynch is playing fantasy football with a real football team. Where he just goes, let's get as many running backs and wide receivers in here as we can. We'll ignore our shoddy offensive line. We'll ignore the secondary and just hope everything works out.
Yeah, it does seem odd. I mean, absolutely. There's a, they don't have that sort of dominant guy outside of maybe Kittle, and even he's only been dominant for 1 year, but it's very deep in these places. And it's hard to see, hard to pick the guy who's necessarily going to be, you know, the 220 carry or 250 carry guy, or the guy who's going to get 130, 140 targets. Which is weird given that, you know, Kyle Shanahan in years past had the reputation of, oh, he's going to target, one receiver and get that guy 180 targets. The Julio Jones example, came up in the recent past. But yeah, it's a really strange sort of depth chart. And you mentioned not addressing the secondary, on the defensive side of the ball. The Niners made a, you know, pretty big splash. They'd make a lot of moves on defense. They signed Quan Alexander to a huge deal, which is really, I guess, just a 1 year pack, but it's 1 year for basically franchise money for an inside linebacker. They traded for Dee Ford, gave him a deal where, again, so it's on a long-term deal. It's only a couple of years, but a significant amount of money for a guy who, the Chiefs didn't want to resign. And then they drafted Nick Bosa, who's not quite 100% yet, but, certainly add a lot of depth to the defensive line, and added Quan Alexander to replace, I guess, Reuben Foster, with the role Foster was going to play as they plan their future. So, I mean, do you think they did enough to fix this defense? Do you think that they just didn't do enough to address the secondary, or how do you feel about the Niners defense heading into 2019?
Well, they certainly, you can't, say they ignored the defensive line. They ignored the pass rush. If they improve, in 2019, they should improve over four wins in 2018. But if they improve this year, this is going to be the biggest reason why, not Garoppolo. This defensive line has, the ceiling to lead the league in sacks. Mm-hmm. They certainly could generate the kind of pressure that can mask the holes in the secondary. It's a terrifying unit. There's no other way to put it. You have the top pass rusher in the draft. You have Dee Ford, who's a veteran pass rusher. Mm-hmm. You have DeForest Buckner, who's a terror inside. This is a scary, scary team. You have linebacker depth of Quan Alexander. Fred Warner, a third-round rookie last year, played well. So this front seven is stacked. Mm-hmm. They're kind of in a division where everyone, almost everyone seems to have a stacked front seven, but this could be the best of them all.
Yeah, I mean, the talent's certainly there. The draft pedigree is absolutely there. You know, I guess you didn't even mention along the defensive line, Solomon Thomas and Arik Armstead. Armstead's a good run-defending defensive end, and Thomas is a guy who, you know, the Niners picked with the third overall pick 2 years ago, and he hasn't lived up to expectations, but, I mean, the athleticism is still there, and it's still pretty early in his career. Not crazy to think he might figure it out. But the secondary, I mean, there's a lot of... a lot of questions. There's Richard Sherman, who did play very well after returning from his own serious injury in 2017. After that, I don't know. I mean, this is a team where I think the only thing you can say is they're going to have more interceptions this year than they did a year ago.
God, I hope so.
Yes, it would be impressive.
I'm sure most of your listeners know, but the 49ers only had 2 interceptions last year. That's less than Earl Thomas had, and he broke his leg in September without for the rest of the year. So it's virtually impossible. They will only have 2 more in 2019. But yes, Richard Sherman definitely played well. It's fair to question if he'll play that well again at age 31 this year. And he's a year after that torn Achilles, but he's still got a torn Achilles in his past.
Right.
He did. We're being perfectly honest. He had a few moments where he was vulnerable last year. Played well overall, but gave up 4 catches for 100 yards for the Buccaneers, and almost everyone gave up big days to the Buccaneers once in a while. But
right.
He also gave up 4 catches for 81 yards to the Cardinals.
Okay.
The Arizona Cardinals. That's a bad sign.
Yes.
But the bigger issue is everyone else. The 49ers have the highest rate of passes to the offensive left side of the field, where Richard Sherman is not, because teams knew we could just throw away from Sherman and throw to the left and have great success. Give up a league high. It was 20-some touchdowns to the offensive left, which is the most in the league. Also, the only defense that did not intercept a pass thrown to the left. Mm-hmm. They were just ripped to shreds to that side all year, and they didn't really do a ton to address it. They're just essentially hoping they can get better performance from Akella Witherspoon and Kwon Williams it's hard to keep track of what's in the awards up to these days. Yes. Which person he's playing or what body part he is injured.
Yes. Sadly so.
The one wild card there would be Jason Verrett, who was a Pro Bowler with the Chargers in 2015, but has only played in 5 games since then. And if he can come back at a shadow of his former self and play 12 or 14 games, that would be a huge, huge jump ahead for San Francisco.
Yeah, I mean, he's already struggling with injuries in camp, unfortunately. And then it's one thing if you have, you know, a great group of cornerbacks, and then you sign Jason Verrett and you say, hey, if we get something from Jason Verrett, that's awesome. You know, we counting on Jason Verrett as, oh, well, he's going to fix this problem. That's another thing. That concerns me in terms of the Niners. And I think they'll be better. Just they'll be healthier, you would figure, on in the secondary. They're going to get more interceptions just by sheer chance, just by balls, you know, getting tipped in the air or bouncing a particular way. They're going to get more interceptions. But I do wonder if, you know, if the pass rush is not there, if Bosa isn't 100% and has kind of an uneven rookie year, if Dee Ford isn't able to stay healthy, you know, there's DeForest Buckner. He's great. He's a superstar interior rusher, but I mean, we could see a defense that kind of looks similar to what we saw last year, and that's not necessarily the most exciting defense in the world. All right, Vince, well, let's talk about the Niners' chances of competing for a playoff spot in 2019 in a moment, but first, why don't we talk about Lightstream? And guys, you know, every month, you get credit card bills. Nobody likes seeing them. They're a pain, but you got to pay them. There's multiple payments, multiple due dates if you have multiple cards. It would just be easier, I think, for everyone involved if you had one payment at a lower rate. And now you can with our friends at Lightstream. You can get a credit card consolidation loan with a rate as low as 5.95% APR with AutoPay. That's going to be a great deal if you have multiple credit cards with multiple APRs that are going to be more expensive. The average credit card interest rate is over 19%. Wouldn't it be nice to get that down under 6% or around 6% with AutoPay? Plus, the rate is fixed, so it will never go up over the life of the loan. You can get a loan between $5,000 to $100,000 with no fees, and you can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. Can't beat that. So just for my listeners, apply now to get a special interest rate discount. The only way to get that discount is to go to lightstream.com/Barnwell. LightStream.com/Barnwell. It's subject to credit approval, and the rate includes a 0.5% autopay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Barnwell for more information. Now back to the show. And in terms of this think about this franchise as a whole, Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch are in year 3 now of their 6-year contracts they each signed to take over this team. So they have job security. It's not like the Niners are necessarily desperate to fire these guys. I think they have more job security than it. Most organizations who struggle in the first 2 years of their sort of new stewardship as a head coach and general manager combo. But what would it take to qualify as a successful season for the 49ers this year? Is it making the playoffs? Is it having a winning record? Is it showing signs of development from Garoppolo? Like what has to happen for the Niners to sit here in January and feel good about themselves heading into 2020?
I think if they're being honest with themselves and realistic about things, they share a division with the reigning NFC champions. They share a division with a team that made the playoffs last year and has made the playoffs 5 times in 6 years or whatever it is. So they have very tough competition in the Rams and Seahawks. And I don't think it's realistic to expect that you will pass them. You can be hopeful. You can be optimistic that you will pass those teams. But I don't think it's realistic to expect better than a third place finish in the division. But in the big picture of things, of course, there's only 4 games in your schedule. Mm-hmm. And they also played the NFC North, which is a pretty deep division. So it's one of those things where a winning record would be a big step forward. Mm-hmm. Just 9 wins would be a hallmark for this team and a sign everything's going in the right direction. But it's more important how they get there mm-hmm. than what the win total actually is. You really need to start seeing some growth from some of these young players. You need to see one of these running backs. You'd like to see one of them, become the guy. We talked about the running back depth. We didn't say much about the wide receivers. You got Dante Pettis, mm-hmm. Marquise Goodwin, the rookies, Deva Samuel, Jalen Hurd. Kendrick Bourne was the leading wide receiver last year and may not even make the team now. Mm-hmm. So they're very deep there, too. But you'd like to see the foundations built and know these are the guys who are going to be carrying our team to a solid playoff run in 2020. We'd like to know, God willing, we'd like to know Garoppolo is our quarterback. We'd like to know who our top running back is going to be. We'd like to know who our playmaking wide receiver is going to be. And then fine-tune the depth pieces. So that's more important to San Francisco this year than any specific win number.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Absolutely. I mean, they can get out of that Garoppolo deal without too much of a burden with their cap after the season. They could, you know, rebuild and say, hey, he's not our guy. We made a mistake. And go forward with Nick Mullins or another quarterback. That's not out of the question, but I think obviously the best case scenario for the Niners is to have Garoppolo play well, to be a, you know, if not necessarily a team that makes the playoffs, a playoff competitor, a team that is, you know, competing for a wild card or competing for a division if the Rams take a step backwards. But yeah, I do think that, you know, things could break the way they broke for the Bears last year. You know, there could be a situation where, you know, everyone stays healthy and they get a great year out of the offense, and it's sort of like a reverse Bears where it's the offense that's a top five offense and the defense that, you know, sort of is in the 15 to 20 range in DVOA. But, I think it's a big ask. I just think it, like you said, the schedule's tough. It's a, you know, a very, certainly a team that has upside, but I think you're relying on everyone to kind of break out might be tough. One more question. I forgot about the other question with the Niners before we hit the break here. They have Robbie Gould, who did sign an extension with Robbie Gould after franchising him. He had requested a trade. The Bears obviously were in the market for Robbie Gould. What would you have been willing to take from the Bears, to put together a Robbie Gould trade if you were the Niners?
Well, here's one I hadn't thought about. my big thing is with very rare exceptions, field goal kicking is very random for me year to year, mainly because it's really a small sample size. It can be skewed by a couple of 50-yarders here and there, 50-yard tries here and there. So, like, place kicker is literally the last position I would worry about on a football team. So, it would not take much for me to trade away a kicker, especially that it, you know, I kind of spent all off season marveling at how the Bears have overreacted to a kicker who had a bad game and underreacted to an offense that had a bad game in the playoffs. They're really, really missing the forest for the trees there. My view is, if you're kicking a field goal, your offense is already failed. So the job is to score touchdowns. That's the goal.
That's a very noble way of approaching it. I wish I, as a Giants fan, I can't say that I share your expectations for offenses scoring touchdowns every time they go out. I mean, to your point though, Robbie Gould, the last 2 years in San Francisco, has hit, you know, 95% and 97% of his field goal tries, but, just 6 kicks beyond 50 yards in, a 75 kick sample. A guy who, you know, 16 of 17 from inside, 20 to 29, 24 of 24, 30 to 39, 26 of 28 from 40 to 49. So hitting a lot of those shorter field goals, but then not really making much of an impact on the deeper kicks. So it does seem like he is benefiting from what seems like a relatively friendly slate as far as kicking goes.
Yeah, he has been outstanding the last 3 years, there's no doubt about that, but he's at 11 years before that where he was, you know, good enough to play for 11 years, or 14 years now, but not, you know, no one ever thought Robbie Gould was anything special until he left Chicago.
That's the funny thing is that not only that, but like the guys who had him leave Chicago were the people who are running the Bears now, who let him go to sign, Cody Parkey. Who was the guy who, of course, or Connor Barth and then Cody Parkey, who of course, signed an extension before last year and it will not be making his way back to the Bears this season.
Yeah. I guess to answer your question, it would be less, I would take less for Robbie Gould than probably most other observers would.
Sure. I think that's fair. Well, let's hit a break. Let's talk about the Cardinals here, after the break on the Bill Barnwell Show with Vince Verhey. All right. Back here on the Bill Barnwell Show, joining us again is Football Outsiders Vince Verhey here on the Shell Performance Line. And Vince, we talked about the Niners before the break, and they were a team that had high expectations last year. I think we're a sort of a trendy playoff pick this time last year and did not meet those expectations. A team that, I don't know if they were a trendy pick to make the playoffs, certainly, but a team that I think there were expectations around. There was certainly a lot of promise. There was some excitement about a new head coach and a new quarterback in Arizona with the Arizona Cardinals. And we're here a year later, and the Niners took a big step backwards, or the Cardinals took a big step backwards, I should say. And they have a new head coach, and they have a new quarterback in Cliff Kingsbury and first overall pick Kyler Murray. So do you think this iteration is likely to be better than last year's 2-14 team? And why do you think that is likely to be the case or unlikely to be the case?
Well, I did write the Arizona Cardinals chapter for Football Outsiders Almanac.
Sure.
And as a professional writer who takes his job very seriously, I subjected myself to rewatching the entire 2018 Arizona Cardinals campaign.
Oof.
Every single play. And I would say this. They cannot be worse than they were last year. Like, I watched a lot of bad football. I live in Seattle. I've seen a lot of pre-Pete Carroll Russell Wilson bad Seahawks teams. I watched the 92 Seahawks that had the worst passing offense ever and won two games with a defensive player of the year. I have seen a lot of bad football. It's been a long, long, long time since I've seen a team as bad as the 2018 Arizona Cardinals. So do I think they'll be better? Yes. Emphatically. Decisively. Yes. They might win 5 games.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, in terms of the 2018 team, what do you think? I mean, everything was bad in one way or another, but what do you think was particularly egregiously bad about the 2018 Cardinals that it's likely to take a step forward in 2019?
That's a very hard question to answer because they were so bad at so many different things.
Yes.
When you're watching it, I think the one thing that mostly strikes you is how bad they were at things that should have been easy.
Mm-hmm.
Things like screen passes and just little slants and flat routes and dump offs, the short routes that are not going to change the game, but it can pick up 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 yards here and there and give you some progress. And they were so terrible at that. 4.4 yards after the catch per reception last year, second worst behind Tampa Bay. And Tampa Bay has no yards after catch because they were throwing everything 20 and 25 yards downfield.
Mm-hmm.
The Cardinals had no yards after the catch because guys couldn't break tackles at all.
Right.
They dropped a lot of passes. They could not protect the quarterback. Guys couldn't get open. NFL next-gen stats track the yard separation each receiver has,
mm-hmm.
and Arizona's top receivers were second worst behind Detroit. Mm-hmm. So no one could get open. No one could catch the ball. No one could break a tackle after the catch. Josh Rosen was kind of the fall guy here, mm-hmm. and believe me, he had his warts. He was not overly impressive. But Steve Young at his peak would have lost 10 games with his team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There's an offensive line that by the end of the year, they were playing guys off the street. I think there were none of the original starters they expected to have heading into the season along the offensive line. It wasn't like they were getting great players from return either. Of course,
every projected starting offensive line was in training camp by the first week of December was either on IR or had been released outright. If you count A.Q. Shipley, who was supposed to be the starting center before his ACL in the preseason,
mm-hmm.
if you count him, they had 14 starters on the offensive line, which is the most we have in our database going back to 1999. Their starters in Week 17 were guys who have been unemployed or on practice squads when the year started. So, you know, we talked about how much trouble the receivers had. The offensive line may have been even worse.
Yeah, and I think to that point, you know, I remember I was on a radio show a couple of weeks ago, I think in Arizona, and they asked me, you know, do you think hiring Cliff Kingsbury is too risky for the Cardinals? And I sort of was a little surprised because I think about the 2018 team, and it's like Cliff Kingsbury might not work out. This offense might be a mess. Kyler Murray might not be the quarterback. Who knows? But at least trying something different than what you had last year is good, right? Like at least just, you know, something that might work, something that might be exciting is better than, put it this way. It's not like you're firing Bill Belichick and replacing him with Cliff Kingsbury and saying, okay, we're going to try something different here. I mean, this was one of the worst teams in recent memory.
No, that's a strange question to me because is Kingsbury a risky hire? What are you risking? What do you have to lose?
Right.
Try something new. Come bless them.
Yeah, I think absolutely. It makes total sense to give, you know, something out of the box a shot. And absolutely, this is Cliff Kingsbury is not your typical hire in a strange, he isn't in a strange way, given that he is, you know, friends with Sean McVay, and that seems to be pretty par for the course as far as hires go. But, you know, someone who was a competent head coach in college football before being fired last year. You know, not the sort of, you know, very successful coordinator or really successful head coach at the college level. I mean, not someone who I think a lot of people were expecting to be an NFL head coach this time last year. And so I wonder about this offense. I mean, do you think it's going to be dramatically different from what we've seen from other NFL offenses in the past? Or is it just going to be sort of, you know, it'll have its uniqueness, but it won't be something that really stands out when we're thinking about it at the end of the year?
I do think that enough elements of the air raid have been used by NFL teams. This is not going to look alien. Mm-hmm. People, this is not going to be like the run and shoot in the early 90s, where teams saw four wide receivers on first and 10 and didn't know what to do. There's nothing reinventing the wheel being done here. What mm-hmm. the changes that are beyond here is going to be more subtle things. Like, I expect, in a lot of ways, they're going to be every stat nerd's dream of an offense from a play calling perspective, mm-hmm. because they're probably not going to run when. Unless it screams an obvious rushing opportunity. If the defense has 7 men in the box, Arizona's going to pass every time. If it's 2nd and 10, Arizona's probably going to pass every time. They're going to pass a lot, and in doing so, they're going to pass more when teams should, because your average NFL team just runs way, way, way too much.
It certainly seems like that's the case.
Simply by committing to passing more often than not, and running only when the situation really, really calls for it, that alone, it gives them a strategic leg up over most of the league.
There's another reason I think the Cardinals are not going to run the ball very frequently. They're going to be in a lot of shootouts this year. I mean, especially, I think it's fair to say, the first 6 weeks of the season, because we mentioned the offensive line getting down to, you know, the barest of bare bones last year. Quarterback's not looking great to start the season for the Arizona Cardinals. Patrick Peterson, the all-world cornerback, suspended for the first 6 weeks of the year. Robert Alford, who was a mess in Atlanta last year, is out indefinitely. Can you think of a worse set of starting cornerbacks than the guys the Cardinals are going to roll out the first 6 weeks of this season?
I think during Peterson's suspension, I think the Cardinals' cornerbacks were probably the worst unit in the league. And I thought that before Alford got hurt.
Yes.
Robert Alford's 31. He was, as you noted, terrible in Atlanta last year. There's a reason the Falcons were not eager to bring him back. Tremaine Brock is 31. He's on, I believe, his fourth team in 4 years. Mm-hmm. He typically has not played enough to even qualify for a cornerback charting tables. He's a bench player now, thrust into a starting role. Mm-hmm. Byron Murphy's a second-round rookie. Granted, the first pick of the second round, but still, a second-round rookie. And those are your starters. And I'll be honest, I wrote the Arizona chapter. I'm not even sure who their nickelback's going to be for these first 6 weeks of the year. I haven't thought. Deadspin used to do a feature every year where they would do they'd get the new version of Madden, and they would do the NFL race war, where they would take every white player on one team and then every black player on one team and pit them against each other. When they did this, because there are so few white defensive backs in the NFL, they would have to get very, very creative and invent white cornerbacks to play in the white team. I think those imaginary white guys might be better than the guys who are actually playing for Arizona this first month and a half.
I don't know. I have absolutely no idea. I mean, the looking at the depth chart, reading about Cardinals camp, I mean, it's, I don't know if they know who's going to be starting at nickelback week one and if that guy is going to be on the roster week four. I mean, this could be a similar situation where you have a Cardinals team that is signing guys off the street. They're going to have a very solid, they'll have the number one waiver position at the end of camp, which they're going to have to put to good use, because there's a chance they could be starting someone who doesn't know the scheme by week three and asking him to play in the slot. It's a messy situation. That's even if Byron Murphy does step in and play well from day one, which even really good cornerbacks tend to struggle as rookies, and especially early in the season before they get their kind of sea legs and they're better during the second half of the campaign. It's not... The one bright spot for the Cardinals is that it's not a absolutely terrifying set of passing offenses to start the year. They host Detroit, which wants to run the ball. They're at Baltimore, which might be one of the worst passing attacks in football. They're hosting Carolina, which, you know, could be good. Certainly Cam Newton looked good in the first half of last year. They host the Seahawks, another team that is very excited about running the football. They're at Cincinnati, which still might be without A.J. Green at that point. And then they host the Falcons, which that's going to be a mess. That they're going to have to they're going to have to expand the scoreboard for that one, I think it's fair to say. But I mean, this is an offense that we think wants to play fast. It's going to be pretty high tempo. A defense that don't know if they're going to be able to stop anybody unless Chandler Jones is, you know, strip sacking the quarterback. There could be some pretty pretty high scores these first, especially that Falcons game stands out as a, you know, I don't know what the total is going to be for that game in Vegas, but that could be the highest total of the year.
No, you're right about all that. And you also have to figure that, you know, with this offense, with a rookie quarterback, as exciting as I'm very optimistic about Kyler Murray, by the way, but as exciting as he's going to be, he's also a rookie quarterback who's probably going to make more than his share of mistakes. And he's probably going to produce a lot of scores for both teams. So to your point, it's going to lead to more shootouts, but also to your point, it's going to lead to Arizona being behind a lot, which means another reason they're not going to be running the ball very much.
Yeah, I think absolutely. With David Johnson, someone who was really disappointing last year, and of course, I don't blame him. I blame the infrastructure around him. But you would figure if he's going to bounce back this year, it might be less about what he can do as a runner and more about the role he's going to play as a receiver.
Yeah, and Kingsbury's offense at Texas Tech, his running backs were—he split them into two groups. There were guys who ran the ball and caught a lot of passes, and who ran the ball and caught about zero passes. So that's a credit to him, I think. He takes the guys who are good receivers and says, "Well, use them," and then takes the guys who are not good receivers and says, "You know what? We're not going to force you to do something you're not very good at. We're going to use you for what you're good at." And as we all know, David Johnson is a very good receiver, so he should get plenty of opportunities in this offense and more than just, you know, a screen pass where he's hit behind the line before he has a chance to get going. He's going to be, he'll line up, I'm sure, a lot of times in the slot, either that or just taking routes out of the backfield. He's going to be used as a receiver running routes, given a chance to get open and catch the ball, not just being asked, you know, catch this ball and then break eight tackles so we can get a first down.
Yeah, I think that's probably a better use of his skill set than asking him to turn into a superhero. At receiver and running back at the same time. I mean, obviously, this is going to be a very unique offense. There's going to be a lot of receivers. This could be a team that carries more wideouts than anybody else in football. They did lose Hakeem Butler to a hand injury that's going to cost him, it looks like, a chunk of possibly the regular season. They're impressed with Keyshawn Johnson, their sixth-round pick. They used a second-round pick on Andy Isabella. Christian Kirk is here. Larry Fitzgerald is here. They have Chad Williams, the runner from a few years ago, who is supposed to be on the bubble. They signed Charles Clay. They signed Max Williams. I mean, there's a lot of possible weapons here for Cliff Kingsbury in terms of his play calling. But to your point about, Kyler Murray and him being a rookie and him going to struggle, you know, Cliff Kingsbury is a rookie head coach at this level. And I think he's dealing with, you know, possibly better defensive minds. I think there's going to be, you know, a bit of a lull where, you know, maybe the teams adjust to their tempo and then they struggle a bit to kind of find that plan B on offense. But I do think this is at least going to be a more exciting Cardinals team and a more watchable Cardinals team if you are assigned the Cardinals for the book in 2020 than they were a year ago.
Yeah, our tagline for the Cardinals this year, just, you know, we do a little one-sentence preview for every team. Our tagline for Arizona is still terrible, but a lot more entertaining. This is going to be a fascinating team to watch. They're going to be trying a lot of things that have not been tried before, at least not to the volume they've done it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of new pieces, a lot of moving parts to figure out how they work. And you know, we're being honest, there is potential for the whole thing to be a nuclear disaster.
Sure.
There's, you know, Kyler Murray, 1 year ago at this time, we thought he was a guy who was in a camp battle for a starting quarterback job in college, who we all thought was going to be a pro baseball player.
Yeah.
Cliff Kingsbury, you know, he finished with a losing record at Texas Tech. I think he had the one bowl game win, if I'm remembering that right. But this is, you know, and he got hired at USC after the year and then left 2 weeks later because, you know, NFL teams started calling. So but the whole team is built on guys who, you know, didn't know they were going to be in the NFL or had no plans to be in the NFL in the not-so-distant past. So it's a very bold experiment. And it could work out well, or it could blow up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they added some talent to the front seven. They signed Terrell Suggs to a 1-year deal. That's going to be weird watching Terrell Suggs in a Cardinals uniform, I have to admit. They signed Jordan Hicks from the Eagles, who should be taking over as one of their linebackers, especially, and does have the range to play in nickel coverage when he is healthy. They're hoping for more out of Hassan Reddick, the 2017 first-round pick. But, I mean, this is a team where even if Cliff Kingsbury does have his stuff going and the offense is working and Kyler Murray is playing well, a team that drafted pretty poorly for years under Steve Keim, and it's going to take a lot of development from a lot of players quickly to get this team on the whole, I think, back where they're looking like a playoff contender.
Yeah, I will add, as long as you're listing the good players, you do also still have Chandler Jones.
Yes, he's
that's
good.
Very important to consider. But your larger point of them having two or three very bad drafts in a row, it's absolutely correct. There's holes all over the roster, and you know, as you discussed, the cornerback is probably the biggest one. They re-signed DJ Swearinger at safety, so they've got, you know, a kind of a stopgap there. And Buda Baker also looks like one of their better young players. But
yep.
The offensive line is five guys who all have severe injury concerns in their past.
Yes.
that's gonna, even if they play well this year, it'll probably need to be rebuilt in the near future. There's problems everywhere. We can find plus signs and reasons for optimism. Larry Fitzgerald's 200 years old. Terrell Suggs, I think, is older. I'm not sure. So there's things to like, but there's many, many more things to question. And again, we talked about the 49ers, their schedule. The Cardinals, you know, this sure as heck looks like the worst team in this division. Then they got to play the Steelers and Browns and Ravens. It looks like they're pretty clearly worse than all those teams. So, you know, they have their work cut out for them. There's no doubt.
Well, let me ask you, Vince, and we'll finish up here. Do you think it's more likely that the Niners will make the playoffs in 2019 or the Cardinals would make the playoffs?
I definitely think it's more likely that the 49ers will make it. But I will say this, we're just writing a piece on best bets that'll be up in ESPN soon. The Cardinals at plus 850 to make the playoffs, those aren't terrible odds.
No.
If you're looking for a long shot bet, you could do worse than that.
I think so. I mean, that's like, if you figure the most important thing you can add to your team is an upgraded quarterback. And, I mean, we saw it with the Browns last year. The Browns, I think, were a more talented team than these Cardinals were, but you replace DeShone Kizer with Baker Mayfield, your entire team looks different. They improved by 7.5 wins. I mean, I don't think the Cardinals are going to do that, but if Kyler Murray is a franchise quarterback, the whole trajectory for this team changes.
Absolutely, and I would say, you know, as long as we're comparing them to the Browns, I think replacing Hugh Jackson with Freddie Kitchens is an even more important upgrade. Now, I don't know if Cliff Kingsbury is going to be Freddie Kitchens, but I know I do know that the Cardinals had a terrible coach last year, and replacing him by default can't help but be a bit better.
Yeah, certainly I think one of the highest variance teams in all of football, the Arizona Cardinals. And Vince, you are an accomplished podcaster. You're a friend of the show. We'll get to that. But also, if people want to purchase the various entities that Football Outsiders are selling in advance of the season, where can they buy the book? Where can they check out fantasy data? Please give the details on where people can buy FO stuff.
Well, the easiest place to find all this is at footballoutsiders.com, which also has daily columns, several columns a day going up throughout the football season. We're actually starting to get into that rhythm right now, and by week one, it'll be two or three columns every single day during the season. You can go to the Football Outsiders store to find access to Football Outsiders Almanac, available in both PDF and hard copy version through Amazon. You can get our Kubiak player, fantasy player projections, customizable to your league, your scoring system, your setup, so you can see projections customized to you and your needs, not just every other fantasy league out there. You can always follow me on Twitter at @FO_VVerhi. That's FO as Football Outsiders, and VVerhi as in Vinny Verhi. And as you noted, I also do a podcast, The Brian and Vinny Show, covering typically retro pro wrestling. We've been recapping the Monday Night Wars and the horror that is World Championship Wrestling in the summer of 2000. All of that available at f4wonline.com and wrestlingobserver.com.
My literal favorite podcast, going on damn near a decade now, the Brian and Vinny Show. Vince, it's always a pleasure. You may have heard thunderstorms in the background as we finished up there. Perhaps the Lord above is expressing an opinion on the chances of the Arizona Cardinals making the playoffs in 2019.
It may be the angry football god talking about two franchises that, frankly, there's a lot of questions about how they've been run in the past.
Absolutely. Well, Vince, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Barnwell. Talk to you next time.
All right. Thanks so much to my guest, Vince Verhey of Football Outsiders. And that conversation was brought to you by Pennzoil, the first synthetic motor oil made from natural gas. The proof is in the Pennzoil. And, guys, I also have exciting news. The new season of 30 for 30 podcast is out August 20th, and it starts with a five-part series on former Clippers owner Donald Sterling, who was ousted by the NBA after being caught on tape making racist and sexist remarks. The series, which explores Sterling's career and how this incident changed the NBA forever, is hosted and reported by ESPN's Ramona Shelburne. It's gotten awesome reviews so far. I have to admit I have not listened to it. It just came out today. It's my next thing to do after I finish this podcast. I'm going to put on the show. Excited to listen to it. It's The Sterling Affairs from 30 for 30 Podcast and The Undefeated. Find it wherever you get your podcasts or at 30for30podcast.com/Sterling. And we'll be back next week with more NFL audio as we start, or continue, I should say, to preview the 2019 NFL season coming up soon here on The Bill Barnwell Show.